one of the best parts of the convention, the ladies' breakfast. And we do a different focus at each convention. For those of us who partook of the spa yesterday, oh, it was an incredible experience. When we got off the shuttle, the ladies were waiting for us outside in the rain. Okay, maybe they weren't waiting, you know, but it was amazing. They were an amazing group. So if you have an opportunity to get to the spa this weekend, please do. The ladies are really wonderful there. Okay, today we're going to be hearing from and interacting with Judy Wilkinson and Susan Glass. And all I really need to say about them is English professors. So watch your language. In a nice way. Okay, guys, I'm going to let you...
All right. Are we really on?
Yes, you're on. Really on.
Okay, so I'm going to hand it to you first,
okay.
Susan.
Okay. So today we are going to be interactively talking about how to write and tell stories, but especially how to write them. You read the program description. You heard what Judy said. Stories are like noses. Answer me.
Everybody has one.
So how do we get them to paper? How do we get them out? We're going to walk through that process together this morning with some tips and tricks, and then at the very end, something where you actually create your own story. So we're going to begin right now. Judy, yes? Housekeeping detail. Please place your ticket for the women's breakfast on the table in front of you so that it can be collected at 12 o'clock. Thank you for telling me that. 12 o'clock. In front of this cup. There we go. All right. So, stories. Judy, you look really harried this morning and you're kind of panting. And you just what's the matter?
Susan, I was walking around my room. My hands were wet. I had soap on my hand still. I couldn't find Carly's harness. I looked on the doorknob. There was her leash. I moved the chair. There was my backpack. And I noticed that I had a crumbling cookie in the backpack from lunch yesterday.
You want to go to the left. Yeah.
So I was walking around. Moved the table. I found her water bowl, which I then spilled a little water of out on the carpet. And then I looked behind the TV, and I was so stressed because I also know she has to go out and pee. So you know, so it's I am very stressed at this point.
So wow,
give it to Judy.
Okay, well, we're playing musical mics here. This is fun.
Okay,
la, la, la.
Good.
So to complicate that, you know, you don't want to wake up your significant other if he's not up yet, and you got to get down here with a cane.
That's right.
Yeah, and you're still worrying about how the dog is, right?
Yep.
Okay, so guys, we've just told a story. What have we done? What does a story have in order to be a story? What does it need? Just shout it out.
Events, otherwise known as plot.
Exactly. What else does it need?
What else?
Tension.
Yes.
And they used to call that conflict, but I used to hate that because everybody thought conflict had to be a war. You had to have Star Wars in every story, you know. I love Star Wars, but you don't have to have it at 6 in the morning before Susan's had her coffee, right? So, you know, tension, exactly. What else does a story have to have?
Settings.
Yes.
Including all your senses.
All of your senses. That's why she told you she spilled the water. You know, because that, you know.
And the cookie crumbs.
All of characters.
Characters.
And the characters are Judy and Carly. And we also need, what else?
Setting. We got setting.
We got setting, you're right. We've got
that's
the situation.
That's sort of the plot. That's sort of plot.
Detail.
Good.
We do. Yes.
An outcome. Which could be sort of like, why are you telling this story anyway?
Yeah. Why is this significant? You know, and it could be significant because Judy's our best friend. This is a rough morning. We need to make her feel better. It could be significant because it was the beginning of the craziest dog weekend ever. She could find the harness, which is they lived happily ever after. She could not find the harness, which is, that's the way a lot of life start. You know, you go on to the next phase, all kinds of things. Irresolution can be the end of that story. There is still one more detail we need here. Point of view.
Yes, point of view.
Now, the long version of this is who speaks, to whom, at what distance, in what form, and with what limitations. That's if you take my creative writing class. Okay.
So I've got a quick and dirty way of remembering sort of these four basic things that we've said. They start with P. So you need person or point of view or perspective. You need plot. You need place, which is another way of saying setting. You need purpose, which is, you know, why are you telling this thing in the first place? And the plot includes what Susan was talking about conflict. And that's all part of plot. So those, we think, are the key elements of the actual story itself. Every story has these. And I'll talk a little bit more about purpose later, because what happens if the sucker changes?
And they do. They
So now Susan is going to talk to us about, okay, so now I've got my story. How do I get it from my head into some form that somebody else can, that I can share with somebody else?
Right. And this is what we call the writing process. Writing requires the big E, exercise. You can't do it unless you apply the seat of your pants to the seat of the chair. We all want to walk around going, I am a writer. Yes, I am. Have you seen my book? Oh.
I'm planning to what I'm wearing on the Today Show.
But guess what? You still have to have subjects and predicates and verbs and adjectives and similes and all kinds of things. And you've just got to make it flow. So how do you do that? Writing process, the most important thing I can tell you is it's daily. Now, daily doesn't mean, people interpret this different ways, you know, 500 words a day, 1,000 words a day. That's not really so much it, but if you have something that you do every day that gets you into the chair doing that writing, it's very, very useful. And I have a couple of things I can offer you that do this, that help you accomplish this. One is called morning pages, because you generally write them in the morning. One of the things I recommend is that you write the first thing you get up so that it gets done. But if you can't, just find a time and a place, a room of your own, as Virginia Woolf says, that's yours. So a writing page works like this. You sit down, you take up your writing implement. It can be your slate and stylus. It can be your Braille Sense, your Braille Note, your JAWS, your Windowizing, your keyboard. It can be your Perkins Braille or whatever it is you're using, your pen. And a morning page is that you simply write nonstop for 10 minutes. You don't worry about what's coming out. The purpose of a morning page is just to loosen everything up. So you may not even be working on that story yet in the morning. My morning pages are sometimes the things I've got to get done that day, or the dream I just had last night, or how I've dumped the water bowl over in the kitchen for the third time and I'm mad. And I just let my thoughts go. Now here's the thing about a morning page. You can save them if you want to, but you don't have to. But every once in a while, some glimmery little thing will happen in one. And you might end up saving it. So the idea of a morning page is nobody has to see it but you. It doesn't matter what comes out. But it's sort of like those yoga stretches, the warm-ups, the sit-ups, the just getting yourself limber. It just makes you relaxed. It's only for you. This is the one writing activity that doesn't need an audience. And that's the purpose of a morning page. Another thing that's really cool are what we call prompts, P-R-O-M-P-T-S. And there actually is a magazine called The Prompt, but you don't need that. Prompts are just one sentence or even one line ideas that you start, you jump off, and again, you don't worry about the outcome. You just see where you're going with them. So titles are really good. Try these out. Enormous changes at the last moment. That'll take you somewhere. A note that I left in Jimmy Leonard's shack at midnight. It's a poem title, but just imagine what would be in that note, you know.
I have one from my trip to New Zealand last year.
Here you go.
We were standing at a bus stop, and the woman we were traveling with looked up, and she said, "My God, there is a high-heeled pump sitting on the ledge of the 12th-story window."
How did it
it's
get
like,
there, right?
What's the story about that?
Yeah. Or how come in the neighborhood where I used to live, there were two shopping carts and a stroller and two women in the parking lot at midnight just standing there? Why? You know, those are prompts. Names are really good. Open a phone book at any, you know, Barbara Allen. Who is Barbara Allen? You know, what kind of a character is Barbara Allen? A name like Artemio Cruz. No, he's an author, but if you didn't know that, you know, who's behind that name? Create a character based on the contents of your trash can. Who eats this stuff? You know? Solve a murder mystery based on what someone left in their email box. Oops. Okay, so these are all writing prompts. Writing in voices other than your own. I love to write letters, and I write letters to my mom and to friends of my mother's, but writing letters to people you know and don't know is a great way to get that writing process going. But the key is do it every day. It's a muscle. If you don't use it, you kind of lose it. It always comes back, but it can be soggy, and you have to go through the same old things all over again. Writing does require a place. If you can get a room of your own, if you have a particular place that you like to do particular work, I usually like to write where there's a lot of light because I have light perception, and I like to write in my kitchen because that's the most creative room in my house, and I like to do it in the early morning where I can hear all the birds. For you, it may be listening to Charlie Parker jazz. You got to figure out what your shtick is, and it may be different according to the different projects you're working on. Beware of the poltergeists. Poltergeists are little guys who jump up in the middle of your writing process and they tell you you're writing when you're not. Like, they say, "Hey, answer this email. You're writing. You can go ahead and do it." But the minute you turn to answer that email, what are you not doing? Writing. You're not doing
"I've got to have a cup of coffee."
"I need another cup of coffee." Or, "I need to research this character. I'm going to go online and I'm going to read all about 12th century France." Well, fine.
But while
money.
I'm reading 12th century France, I just remembered that the perfume that they mentioned is on sale at Amazon.
And I have to go And that's not writing. We think it's writing, but it's called procrastination. And if you really want to do that, then make your day like a school day. First period, writing, 8 to 9. Second period, research writing, 9 to 10. Third period, correspondence, 10 to 11. If you have to do that, you have to do that. You know, that's fine. Here's a really important one, and I'm so glad Judy put this in. And then I'm turning this back to you completely, Judy. Writing requires a tool at hand. Because things happen to you all day that you think you're going to remember. I'm 60 now in May. I do not remember what I think I'm going to remember. So, you know, you're walking down the street in New York. This really happened to me, honest to God, in 2008. And this man said to this other man, "So will you marry a virgin?" And I said, "What?" You know, and somebody said this. I have to write this down. You need the slate and stylus. You need the bookport recorder. You need a handy note taker. You need what do you call those? An Olympus, something to get those ideas down so that they're happening at all times so that you can come back to them later. It's really, really important. And it's that if you do it all the time, then what you find is that you rarely get writer's block, because even if the thing you meant to come out doesn't come out, something else usually will. We get blocked when we haven't written in so long that the words just aren't there.
This is why the whole physical analogy, you know, the joke is applying the seat of the pants to the seat of the chair, but the truth is, it really is like exercise, and it really gets, you can write more complex things if you've had some practice. You can't run 5 miles the first day out, nor can you write a complex, probably a very complex thing, you know, by just sitting down one morning and say, "Okay, great novel, here I am." And it's also just so important to have stuff that you never know you're going to need. Yesterday, a couple days ago on the airplane, I heard a little boy saying, "Daddy, when will I be old enough to have an iPhone?" And the dad said, "iPhone 13.
Wow. Good line.
And the little boy said, "Gosh, it's only iPhone 9 now." You know, so, but that was so precious and so much like a little modern kid. If I just ever need a little snippet of conversation, you know, I've got it. But if I don't write that down, if I didn't write that down, in a week it'd be gone. You know, like all the jokes you were going to remember to tell, like that. They're gone. Okay.
Okay, and now we're on to who do you tell it to? This is your baby.
Yes. Now you've got a story. Who do you tell it to? Think of a spiral, like a widening circle. The first essence entity that you would tell it to would be a trusted friend or two. Too often what happens to beginning writers is they share it with 10 people and one says, "I loved it," and the other one says, "I hate it," and the third one says, "How could you talk about your Aunt Minnie that way?" And so you need to be careful who you share with at first so that they're supportive, so that they perhaps give you some good advice, and so that they don't, the real key is that whatever they tell you helps you move forward, doesn't set you back. Now, Susan, you can tell us a little more about the second part of the process of who you talk to, because you have now a widening circle. This may be people you don't know so well, such as a writing group. So I wish you would say a little more about writing groups.
So writing groups are a wonderful way to get feedback. I will say that finding a writing group is sometimes like finding the perfect fit for a therapist. You want to find, and I'm not saying it's that hard, but you want to find the people you really trust. But virtually every community or you know, community library will either have a writing group or get one started. And we used to, at West Valley College where I taught, we had a writing group of our faculty, even in and from our English department, who would get together. Poet laureates. These days, just about every community has a poet laureate, and they will usually have some sort of writing group in a library. But a writing group can be as small as two best friends, and it could be as large as 10 or 15 or 20 people, and it depends what you are trying to do. Some writing groups make these ground rules that everyone will bring enough copies of what we're working on a given day to share so that everybody has a copy to look off of. And, of course, if you're in such a writing group, you want to make arrangements for those people to email you their work ahead of time so you can be ready as well, right? Some writing groups have a stipulation that you actually read the work aloud before you begin to discuss it, often in a voice of someone other than the writer so that the writer can hear it in a different voice. And that can be a really neat thing to do. If it's a short piece, a poem, or a couple of pages of prose, you might be able to do the whole thing on site. If it's part of a longer work, like a novel, maybe you read a couple of paragraphs just to establish voice. And then writing groups create their own customs for how they want to give feedback. Do they write comments? Do they speak the comments? Is the writer allowed to interact with people while the comments are going on? I find it's often better for me to be quiet when people are talking about my story or my prose piece, my nonfiction or my poem, because it's interesting to hear their questions and their interpretations and their points where they were confused and their points where they were clear. And if I'm jumping in saying, "Oh, but what I meant was, oh, the thing you have to realize is," then I'm not doing what really important thing. I'm not listening. And the real key to writing is being a good listener. That's how you get your images. That's how you get your characters. That's how you make your work better. And so, you know, for me, the ideal workshop is one where I'm just kind of quiet until the very end when they say, "Okay, come in," and I'm just taking those notes. Workshops talk about different kinds of comments. Judy's already touched on, how I liked it or I hated or how could you don't really help you. But when somebody says something like, I love that sentence in the second paragraph where you were talking about Aunt Minnie and the stroller, and you got that wheel going flubbada, flubbada, flubbada on the ground. It was a really neat image. I could see that. I wasn't quite sure what you meant in paragraph four when you talked about Aunt Ida's spoons. Did you, you know, those are the kind of comments that are really helpful. And you will learn when you're with different people who kind of floats your boat and who really helps you and which comments really help your writing. And sometimes you try out a couple of different writing groups to get what you need. Some people are very happy doing that just in the online environment. I'm a people person, and I really like to be in the same room. So you can kind of go hunting for your writing groups. But they do keep you on task. They do keep you working on a project. They do keep you involved. There are free writing retreats that you can go to as well as conferences. If you want to learn about local writing groups, Poets and Writers Magazine, which you can get through NFB Newsline,
get the writer through NLS.
The writer through NLS, Writer's Digest. There are a lot of different ways to help that. I better stop now, Judy.
I want to say one more thing about writing conferences. There are many sort of for sale intensive writing workshops, and if you ever just wanted to take a week and have a vacation, there are often great conferences that can allow you to do that. And those, you know, you can take a writing cruise. You can, so just know that if you want to, you can pay for intensive writing experiences with feedback.
I saw a wonderful one in Poets and Writers a couple months ago. It was writing for social justice, and it was writers who wanted to learn more about particular communities, so they were working on adult literacy programs, they were working in bilingual communities, they were working on environmental programs, and they were kind of writers in residence and chronicling what was going on there, too. And that sounded kind of neat. There are actually MFA programs that do that now. MFA stands for Masters in Fine Arts.
We are going to talk about the widest circle, and then we're going to set it up so that you actually get to tell your stories to each other. So the widest circle, after we've shared it, you know, with some people in our group, the wider circle, of course, is people we don't know. Maybe we send it to a magazine, or maybe we put it in an online blog or something. Now, that's interesting. When your little child, your birthed writing project goes out into the world, in many ways, it's like a gift. How many times have you seen that beautiful lace doily that you hand-knitted being used as a mop rag for the... Or the beautiful glass vase that you intended for people to use is being used as a candlestick holder. That's not what you intended, but you know what? It isn't yours anymore. You gave it away. So when somebody says, well, boy, this story meant to me that life is short and you should be happy, and you think, no, I meant to say enjoy every minute, but life is never long enough or it's too difficult. So you may totally think what you wrote means something different. You can still have it the way you want it, but remember, everybody else gets to have it the way they want it too. So, having done all this, now is the hardest part of what we need to do today. We need to count off by twos. You will never believe how difficult this is. So somebody at each table needs to say one, and the person to their right needs to say two, and then the person to that person's right needs to say one around the table. So let's do that now for like 30 seconds. Do your ones and twos. That's right. So we've got a team. You've got the
I'm
table.
One. You're
and I'm two.
Three.
Yep.
Okay.
Hurry up. See, this is the hardest part. Is there anybody without a number? Is there any table where there's a forlorn one looking for a two? Who's a one without a two? Can you say what's your name? Allison. Is there another one without a two? Are you? You're not sitting. We're good.
Can Artis and Allison find each other?
Can you find each other for a minute?
Well,
you know what? Artis, I'm going to come over and be your two, and Susan's going to come over and be Alice's two. Is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way we'll do it. Anybody else without a one or a two? Okay. Here's what you're going to do. I'll lay it out so that we can kind of... You're gonna have about 5 minutes to tell a story, trying to keep in mind those four P's. You know, you want to about something that happened yesterday. The P's again are a person, a point of view, a place, a plot, and a purpose. Oh, I have one last thing to say about purpose. You know, sometimes you get started, you're halfway through your story, and you say, shoot. My purpose seems to have dissolved or it's changing. Guess what? Your facts may not fit it anymore. You may need to go back and revise. And I used to have a teacher in college that said, there's no such thing as writing. There's only rewriting. So that's by the by. So tell your story. Talk for 5 minutes. Then you're going to turn around and the other person's going to tell your story. Then you're going to take a few minutes to tell each other what you learned by sharing, and then we'll open it up and you'll tell the rest of us what you learned by sharing. So
I'm going to go find Allison.
And I'm going to leave the mic with Vita.
Okay, the first 5 minutes has started, either one or two. Okay, time. Switch places. Okay. Shh.
So what are some of the things we noticed while we were telling our stories? Who's ready to talk? Okay.
Linda pointed out something really interesting to me. She said, I tell my story like a reporter. I realize I do this in my life all the time. I want to go from start to finish. I did this, I'm done.
Yes.
I don't do the feeling part and the image part and so when I realize when I go to meetings and so forth, I'm waiting for them to get to the point. I get bored. So that's it. That's a great
Who's next? Who wants to add a point?
I can.
Who's that?
Gail,
where are you? Speak up. There you go. There you go.
I'm telling my story, or trying to, and as it comes out, I realize what I need to do, is it morning pages or whatever I'm doing, is I need to write down the pieces, because it was like a jigsaw puzzle. As I'm moving along, another piece turns up that I said, oh, I really need to put this over here. What I first need to do is to get them all on cards or whatever I want to use, that I can shuffle them and move them around, and then lay the pieces out, because a piece of feeling was coming up, or all of a sudden, I forgot this before. This is a major prologue before the thing actually happened.
That's great.
So anyway, that's...
Somebody else? Yeah. I'm stealing it away from you. So
Pam?
Right here. Pam? Yeah. Here you go. Handing you the mic.
Thank you. One thing I noticed telling this story is I like detail and emotion, so it was more detailed, and I actually remembered the more I told it, the more I remembered names and places and stuff.
Yes, that is such. Oh, Christy, I'll bring it to you. But have you ever noticed that as you start to tell, more and more detail comes to you? Christy, where are you?
Right here.
I have a hard time with word blocking, and so I would want to tell my story, and the words just wouldn't come out. So I do like writing, and I do like putting my words down and then being able to, yay, cut, copy, paste.
Vita has our time. Can we go? 7:59. So, did I hear somebody say? Oh, we've got some time. And who else has an observation about what happened? Somebody else? Okay, I'm coming back your way. Who's that? Speak up, keep talking.
My name's Kelly.
Kelly, I'm coming to you. But remember, this is a blind woman, you know. Where are you?
I'm
handing it. Can you reach? Reach.
There we go. Oh, you got it.
Okay, good. Hi, my name is Kelly. And I just wanted to share that I noticed when I was listening to my number one, she had some emotional stuff in her story. And it was very hard for me to continue listening without wanting to reach out and share back and hug her, you know. So she did a beautiful job on her story, and it's very hard to listen without getting involved.
Yes. Who was it? Hi there. Do you have anything you want to add?
Well,
Have a mic.
Sure. My thoughts initially were that she and I had very similar stories in broad outline, in that we planned to do some things and they didn't work out the way we expected, and we had to improvise for different reasons and so forth. So in that regard, they were the same thing, but our reasons for doing it were very, very different. And she's right, I was very emotional about it, visiting with my my late brother's wife was, it's still pretty raw. He was my last brother, and I have absolutely nobody left from my family of origin, and it just feels, I feel bereft. I still do.
Well, of course you do.
And but there's just one more thing I wanted to say. I don't mean to be a time hog,
but I very seldom
talk about myself to other people, because I think it's partly because the way I was raised to you know, stay in the shadows and stuff like that. So I very seldom let people see any of that kind of stuff. It runs against the grain. So you caught me on a real off moment.
but that is so important, because again, what cuts what cuts close to your heart will cut close to somebody else's heart too. And yes.
I'm on this side.
Who's that? Is that Abby?
I just wanted to share.
Of course.
Thing.
Sure.
Are you finished?
Yep.
So Beth and I were partnered, and we got involved in conversation about so many different things and got way off the topic. But it was absolutely wonderful connecting.
But that was not writing.
But it could be a ton of stories.
You know me well enough to know that I'm not going to follow directions.
Anyone else want to say something? Wait a minute, I heard who?
Bonnie.
Almost
behind you, almost. There you go. Well, you're good. Look at that, getting around. Deborah and I here didn't know each other, and we had a great time telling stories. What I noticed, I got like all the P's in, I believe, but, and this is something that as a totally blind woman, I struggle with in writing. Yeah, I identified the place, but I gave nothing about the description. And I find I'm learning gradually. I am progressing, but I really find, you know, what I read in books, and I'm no novel person at all to write, but when I read things in books, it's so visual. I'm learning gradually to use my senses and say, oh, well, I'll use my senses. Mine are just as good. But it's really challenging, especially if you think your surroundings are ordinary or who would care. I could go on and on, but that's something to struggle with. Here we go.
You know, that is, I think, such a wonderful observation. And sometime we need to talk about, as blind writers, how do we describe the world if we think we need to do that? And a lot of blind writers have written, you know, about this challenge. So you've raised it. We'll all sit with it. Somebody else wanted to share. Oh, there's lots over here at this table. Who's that? So Vivian, I'll give you first, and then somebody else.
No, I was just calling out for Vivian.
She's on the other side.
Okay. I can pass the mic.
Yeah, can you pass it around?
Give that to me, my dear.
Yes.
And then if you could pass it.
Evers to Tinkers to Chance.
Okay, what I learned is that I'm ordinarily a very organized person, but when it comes, when just sharing my story, I'm thinking, okay, it's very different to be organized in order to be creative. And so that's what I learned.
Several people at this table wanted to talk. So who else?
I just have a quick comment.
Sure.
That I think someone had mentioned when you're telling a story, the details come through. And I think that really happens in speaking it aloud helps. And I was telling the story about the spa, but what I was ended up talking about is how that community of women that were there ended up really connecting with us, you know, at in terms of the blindness. And just very quickly, at the end of my time together with my person that was helping me, she said, you know, I know that you don't know this, but I have a lot of tats. So I said, oh, great. Will you describe them to me? And it was, it was like she realized she's makes a statement by having a lot of tattoos, and I wouldn't know that statement, and she wanted to say it. Yeah.
You know, this is a great example of a story that started going one place. So I'm sharing about the sensual experience, but winds up being about sort of this community building. So if you were actually going to write that, you know, you'd chop out some of the lavender oil and you'd add more of the, you know, tat part of the story. Also, I just want to make a comment about details. There's a famous line from Mark Twain who says, "Don't tell me the woman was screaming. Bring her on and let her scream." It's the hardest thing, often the hardest thing to do as a writer is to tell. You tell, but you must show. We tend to tell, but we want to show. Somebody else at this table had something?
I have something.
I'm coming to you. Can you hand this around?
I apologize, I somehow read the schedule wrong and went to Oak Room. But anyways, this is, no, Lorene Theveny. Anyways, I'm a person that's written on and off since I was about 7, poetry and different things. And I have trouble keeping track of things. And I think I get more creative and can focus in my writing because it makes you really think about what you're doing, even if you do 5 or 6 or 8 drafts, and then finally you get your message across. So sometimes I feel like I came out clearer in my writing than my speaking.
Because you don't get to say things twice usually. No. You know, I think we'll take a couple more, and then, you know, we want to stop things while it's going good instead of just kind of letting it peter out. Anyone else want a chance?
Donna.
I can hear where you are. I'm coming. Okay.
You know, it was interesting sharing the story because for my story, it was about sharing a connection that was made yesterday while everybody was loving the spa, and believe me, I would have been there. I was meeting a cousin of mine for the very first time. And so with my partner, I was sharing about the connection and how special it was and a number of things that happened beforehand that almost caused the connection not to happen. And so it was very special. And in my case,
the place was totally irrelevant. It was all about the connection, and that was very special. And I also learned that the partner that I was with had never experienced the spa that all of you shared together yesterday, and it was wonderful hearing about that experience as well. So thank you.
Donna, you raise a very important point. Though we've said all these things go into a story plot, you know, place, they don't need to be emphasized equally. Like as you just pointed out in your story, place was not at all important. So, I mean, it has to occur in space and on, you know, in a physical, but it doesn't always have to be as equal. Who's Pam? Yeah, I'm bringing you the mic. No, don't, we're not yelling.
Okay, my question is, how do you get, because I'm always thinking about different plots and descriptions and details, how do I get it all on paper?
Well, I, you know, who has an answer? If you have, can you spend 20 minutes? You really just need to get those seat of the pants on the seat of the chair. Just Linda's asking the mic.
Okay, an idea for Pam. I think you'll like this. I'm a student of writing. I read a lot of books about writing. I don't do enough writing. Anyway, Anne Lamott, some of you may know her. She has a wonderful concept called, pardon my German, shitty first drafts. Put down something. You know, it's not going to be world-class Nobel Prize-winning stuff right away. You know, just write whatever. And that's what Morning Pages is about as well. But one thing I wanted to say is lately I've been hearing a lot in the sighted world, and I want people not to be deterred by this. It's a lot of people talking about how pen and paper is so much more connected than electronic writing. And that makes us feel crappy because we do not rely on pen and paper. But that doesn't mean, you know, we can come back with the knowledge that Braille stimulates the same part of the visual cortex as reading. So they've got that wrong where we're concerned. We can still write even if we don't sit with a lovely journal in the park.
Hi, back. Anyone else?
Yes.
Yes, who's that?
It's Vivian again.
I love it. I mean, we can go on for some time. I'm coming. Can you hand that back to Vivian?
Sure, absolutely.
And then you.
There we go.
The one thing I was thinking is that if we let our minds be really quiet and just filter everything out and then think about what we want to write down and just write down words, just all the words that come to mind about whatever topic that we're writing. And I also wanted to say an interesting note here. Being sighted before, I actually cannot see at all, but when I use a pen, I'm just scribbling, and I find that the words come out much quicker than they do when I write Braille. And the last comment is that what happens is that we can also look at who's the audience that we want to address. What do we hope that we want to accomplish? And it might be several audiences, you know, that type of thing. And a lot of times what I do is I look at, okay, if a blind person was reading this, how would I write it? If a sighted person was reading it, and then, well, then how can I accommodate both communities? So I kind of go through that process, depending on the topic.
Such good stuff. Yes, is that Pam? I'm coming. You gotta keep talking. Where are you, Pam? I'm zeroing in.
Thank you. Sorry to take you on this wild goose chase. You know, I was listening the other day. I got here a little bit late, so I apologize. So I kind of got on the late show. So I'm not sure if what I'm going to say is relevant, but I hope it is. Thank you. I was listening. I have satellite radio, and on that radio is a channel called the Doctor's Channel, and they had a program regarding different psychological issues and things. And they started talking about writing and talking about when we were young and we used to write in our diary, which people don't do that now. As apparently, as far as I know, as non-tech as I am now, it's a blog, you know. But it used to be, you know, that you write in the diary and lock it up. And if you were to open your diary now, or if you got your mother's diary that was handed down to you, you would realize what good writers we were, because you weren't worried about how it came out. You were totally in the emotion of the moment and totally, you know, when we're teenagers, everything is a big deal. And so anyway, it'd be interesting if some of you who might have a diary or something to go back and read it, or go back and read if you have copies of letters that you wrote to your wonderful person that you were in love with that you never were afraid to send. And, you know, it really sparks things. So anyway, for what that's worth, thank you.
I have 10 years of diary. They all start on January 1st and they end on about January 17th. Who else would like to share? Was that Beth? It's Beth.
Hi. So I want to talk about journaling. And I don't know if this is like what Pam was talking about. Okay. So I very often, like every 5 or 10 years, I'll go back and sit down and read the journals. And it is fascinating. And my mom did the same thing. When my mom was pregnant with me, my mom did the same thing. And she also saved tons of letters in our baby books, and she gave us our baby books recently. So I have letters going back when I was like 12 years old telling my mother how much I loved camp, and then I had all these things that had happened in camp that were wrong. It's like I said, so I have a really good imagination. So someone tried to commit suicide at camp, but it's lovely. And then someone else they went to the dentist and their teeth, they pulled out the wrong teeth, but everything was great. So I just think they're great to read.
Who else? Is that Maria again? Hello, Maria again.
One more time. I got it right in the boob. Sorry about that.
You didn't have to tell them. Okay. Just speaking of writing, going back to my wonderful sister-in-law, of whom I am very fond, she has undertaken of her own volition to try and translate all my mother's poetry, which is all written in Russian. And she says there's quite a bit of material, and I don't know how far she's going to. She decides she's going to scan it all first and then, you know, try to go from the scanned copies. But anyway, I think that's just really wonderful of her, because she seldom shared her poems. You know, once in a while when she felt that urge that she wanted to tell you, you know, poems or prayers that she used to write. She's very creative. I mean, and it just amazes me right now, because my granddaughters and my daughter is so much like her. I think, you know, really, is that gene that strong to be that compassionate and that industrious and that creative all at the same time? And yet so volatile. Oh, my goodness. And it's all right there. It's all right there. And I'm just amazed. Anyway, so it's quite a treasure.
And just think what a treasure that will be for your grandchildren, Maria. Who's somebody over here? Kathy. Oh, hello, Kathy. Oh, hey, I'm coming around. Can you reach it to Kathy?
I can. I have a thought and a question. Pam had talked about the journaling. Well, one of the neatest things is that my mom was doing genealogy, and she actually received through some distant relatives a journal that was written in the 1800s. And so, and from one of the generals in the Confederacy. And so it's, and he talks about his experiences. And so it's very interesting. And she actually then read it onto tape so that I could listen to them. And so that was really neat. My thought with that, or my question, is if somebody doesn't necessarily want to do the physical writing, but they create an audio journal on a regular basis, and then they can go back and listen to it, that process of auditorily letting your thoughts flow creatively, is that as is that considered writing in that from that same same cortex of the brain?
Yes.
She is.
Maybe I'll let you do that in the BRLC.
Kathy, that absolutely is the same thing. And in fact, we live in an incredible age, if you think about it, because of the ability to save voices through MP3 and you know, cassettes, you name it, you name the and the media will keep changing. That will be our challenge. But think for a minute about all of the women who came in and out from milking the cows or worked in a factory whose voices you will never know. All of the singers, the seamstresses, the writers who had talents that we never knew about. And one of the things that's so cool now is being able to, you know, you read a contemporary writer, pop on YouTube, and sure as shooting, you can get an interview. So I say, yes, if you can leave an audio legacy to anybody in your life, you are doing a really, that's a story, that's a video. I have been gathering oral history family interviews since 2009.
Vita says we have to wrap it up, but just Linda says, remind you of StoryCorps.
Yes.
What is it?
This mic just died, or it went off or something.
Oh, dear.
Here you go. Okay. StoryCorps is a project of the Library of Congress where you and a partner sit down and you create a 70-minute session where you the person asks you questions. You can think of them ahead of time. You tell a story. And they're archived, and everybody will have them for generations. There's one in San Francisco at the Public Library. Every city, every major city, NPR does a StoryCorps segment every Friday morning.
And there's a podcast, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Vita is telling us we have to wrap it up.
Thank you. Well, if I have the mic last, then I get to say anything I want, right? This reminds me of my wedding. In order to remember my wedding, what we did instead of a guest book is we had a friend walk around and just get a statement or whatever they felt in the moment onto an MP3 player. Every time I listen to this, I don't just hear what they're saying. I hear the plates in the background, people with the forks and the dance music so you get a huge, you get an entire experience out of it. And I encourage you to record. It is such wonderful. Okay, thank you. Wow, thank you, Susan. Thank you, Judy. And thank you to everybody. It was really wonderful. Okay. If you are not on the women's list and you'd like to join us, please let me know. All I need is your email address. The women's list is a place for us to share. Sometimes we share very personal things. Sometimes we don't. But it's also a place where we plan. We do have women's calls about 3-4 times a year. We'll do a workshop, and they're over the phone generally, and those are fun. And then, of course, we meet at the conventions every year. So if you're not on the women's list and you're interested in joining us, we'd love to have you join us. It is a wonderful place to communicate. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.